This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Recently, a curriculum exploring historic racism in America has drawn fire from conservatives across the country, prompting legislation to keep it from being taught in public schools. That's true in Ohio and Kentucky, where local lawmakers have drafted bills seeking to ban what's called critical race theory. It's also known as CRT. One of the local lawmakers pushing anti-CRT legislation is Fort Thomas Republican Joe Fisher in Kentucky, and the other joins us now live on the program, Ohio State Representative Gene Schmidt, a Republican from Claremont County. Representative Schmidt, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
Well, welcome. Nice to hear your voice.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Representative Schmidt, I'd just like to start with an exploration of critical race theory and what your understanding of it is. I know it's a topic that a lot of people are maybe hearing about for the first time, despite the fact that it has been around for several decades at this point. Would you mind defining for our audience, as you see it, what critical race theory is?
Sure, but let's go to the background of it. It actually was first introduced by Derrick Bell, who was a Harvard lawyer, and he really shaped the idea based on Marxism, which was class warfare. And when you look at his writings, he does allude to the Marxist ideology of Karl Marx when he adapted the idea of critical race theory. But let's go to the American Bar Association's definition, because there's all kinds of definitions of critical race theory. Critical race theory is an interrogation of how the social construction of race and institutionalized racism perpetuate a racial caste system that keeps people of color to the bottom tiers. It acknowledges that racism is socially constructed and a normal feature of society. It is embedded within and upheld in today's systems and institutions, like the legal system. Now, again, this is the American Bar Association's definition. That doesn't mean they agree with it or not. It is just their definition.
Well, what about you? Do you agree with that definition?
Well, I think it's a stilted definition. I think that what people like Derrick Bell were trying to do was to get rid of racism in the United States. And with the passage of the Civil Rights Bill in the 60s, he looked at it 5 years later and realized it wasn't working as quickly as he wanted and thought there was a different way. But I look at this as this can be a very divisive idea because it now puts people against each other. And that's what the civil rights legislation said you can never do. In fact, some of the lawsuits out there on critical race theory point to the fact that embedded in our law is that you cannot pit one group or one person against another. Everybody has to be treated equally.
Do you think that in this country, everyone is treated equally?
By the definition of the Constitution and our rights, yes. But as we know, we all have different abilities. And I believe that in this great country of ours, no matter what or where we come from, if we can achieve our American dream if we choose to set the goal and go after the goal, regardless of where you came from or what your background or your history was.
We're talking with Ohio State Representative Gene Schmidt, a Republican from Claremont County and a co-sponsor of House Bill 322, which looks to set parameters for boards of education, school districts, and the State Board of Education as it relates to issues surrounding critical race theory. Representative Schmidt, before we dive into some of the specifics inside this piece of legislation, I want to talk a little bit about why it seems we're talking more about race in this country. It goes back to last year's killing of George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer, a subsequent series of killings of African Americans at the hands of police and all those that preceded the events of last year, leading to what has been characterized as a racial reckoning, including across cities in Ohio. So race and racism is very high in the public conscious right now. And I'm wondering, if you could share with our listeners what you think you might have learned last year as we explored some of these issues, particularly as white people.
You know, George Floyd's, that was the horrific, horrific incident and a travesty of justice. And it was perpetuated by a police officer that should never have worn the uniform. As a former township trustee, I had a police officer that did something very, very similar, not to one person, but to two people in my township. We voted to get rid of him. The problem was binding arbitration forced us to bring that individual back. That's one of the problems with in our society. It is very difficult for law, for police departments across the country to get rid of bad actors. That police officer in Minneapolis should have gotten the boot years ago, and yet they were unable to do it because of binding arbitration in their area. Yes, he did this to, unfortunately, a man of color. I'm not sure that race was the only motivation there. Probably was a little bit of the motivation with that officer. I don't know what was in his mind, but I knew that he was a volatile individual that should never have worn the badge.
When you hear from Black communities in Ohio about their relationships with police and how to them it might feel like more than a series of bad actors, and that serious reforms are needed in the way communities handle policing, what is traditionally your response?
You know, I look at Cincinnati and what we have done over the years to make sure that police officers are being equal in their ability to handle an individual, whether you're pulling somebody over for a traffic issue, or they have a warrant out for their arrest and you've discovered it. We've come a long way. We're not perfect in Cincinnati. But again, officers have to understand everybody needs to be treated fairly when they become involved with a police officer. And usually a police officer, when they're pulling you over on the highway, has a reason to pull you over.
We're talking with State Representative Gene Schmidt, a Republican from Claremont County and a co-sponsor of House Bill 322. Let's talk about this piece of legislation. Why push this now? What motivates you to co-sponsor this piece of legislation right now?
Well, first off, it's my constituents. In Ohio today, we have three separate organizations working to make sure that moms and dads understand that this could become a tool that would indoctrinate their children into a belief that they may not be comfortable with. In my own locality, we have a group called Friends of Liberty, but you also have Value Voters and parents with Ohio's Children, I think, is the third organization that have all come around with this. The issue that the bill that I really like is House Bill 322. And let me give you some of the components of it. One is that it says that it will ensure state agencies, school districts, and schools that do not teach to instruct or train administrators, teachers, staff members, or employees to adopt divisive concepts and integrate them into the curriculum. In other words, it says you can't do this. And some of these divisive concepts are: one race or sex is inherently superior to another race or sex. I think we can agree with that. An individual, by virtue of the individual's race or sex, is inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive, whether consciously or unconsciously. I think we can agree with that. An individual should be discriminated against or receive adverse treatment because of the individual's race. That's wrong, and we agree with that. That it says that an individual's moral standing or worth is determined by an individual's race or sex. We can't teach that because that is wrong. an individual, by virtue of the individual's race or sex, bears responsibility or actions committed in the past or by other members of the same race or sex. We can't teach that, but that's what critical race theory suggests we teach. Critical race theory also wants us to believe that the advent of slavery in the territory that is now the United States constituted the true founding of the United States. And we know that's not true. It was having a meaningful justice system and religious liberty.
Well, Representative Schmidt, I want to ask, because there's another piece about slavery in here, and I just want to reiterate what you just said. According to the Columbus Dispatch, which also bullet pointed some of the highlights of House Bill 322, of which you are a co-sponsor, like you just said, it would forbid the State Board of Education, school boards, and school districts from requiring teachers and staff members to adopt a belief such as the advent of slavery in the territory that is now the United States constituted the true founding of the United States, and also that slavery and racism are anything other than deviations from true American values like liberty and equality. That one, I'd like you to explain a little further, if you would.
Well, first off, let's go back to the founding of the United States. That's the 1619 theory.
Which is when African slaves were brought to the United States as deeply explored by the New York Times.
When you look at teaching from a 1619 point of view, yes, that would be what they say founded America. But America was not founded on that. America was founded on the belief that we wanted to have a colony that was free of tyranny that was going on in England. And we wanted a colony that allowed all religious beliefs to come forward with. That's why we came here. Now, there were indentured servants and slaves. One of the interesting things about history that people don't want to teach is that the first African Americans that came over were, in fact, indentured servants. And that lasted about a decade until some people believe that now the ones that were coming over could be called slaves, or as the proper term now is, enslaved. But again, when you're teaching history, let's teach it accurately. And what we're saying is you can't teach from a theory that hasn't been proven. You can invite that idea into the classroom, but you can't teach it as a concept that is basically validated.
Representative Schmidt, I mean, as you just said, you know, we have this historic legacy in this country about land of the free, right? Home of the brave. And we have this extraordinarily conflicted history in which that was not true for many people who were brought here against their will. And we still see lasting implications of the decision to enslave so many people on this soil. Is that not a concept worth exploring more deeply in public schools, this conflicting founding of America? Even you yourself, as a woman, would not have been allowed to vote. You know, when the country was founded, you would not be serving in office.
Correct. And yet, and as somebody that continues as a woman to have to fight for true equality, I would not want my grandchild to be taught from a viewpoint that they are guilty for past sins, because those children are not guilty for past sins. Look, I have had to fight all my life to be able to, number one, run in a marathon, two, work on an indie pit crew. And now I'm fighting from a transgender point of view, whether I will still be able to compete as a woman when a transgender woman definitely has the physical prowess to beat me. So I fight this every single day. I'm not immune to discrimination.
State representative.
We are not dismissing the past, but when we are working to build a better country. But if I have that frustration that you've just felt me to listen to me deliver. If I've had that in my purview the whole time, I couldn't work for things like true criminal justice. I couldn't work to end the death penalty because it is horribly unfair to the folks that don't have the means for a great attorney, whether they be people of color or people of poverty. I am working towards that. I am working towards a just and fair criminal justice system that makes sure that when you are interrogated, that you are not bullied into a false confession. Those are the kind of things that I am working on. And I am doing that knowing that I am a woman and that there are people that are going to look at me as a woman and say, is that really a valid point? I'm going to fight. I'm going to work past it. And I'm going to work for that kind of justice because our country was founded on justice. When you look at the Constitution, 1657 in Massachusetts, we had the concept of you're innocent until proven guilty. When we look at the Constitution, in the first
I've
document,
got about 30 seconds just to let you know.
All I'm saying is that our Constitution is replete on making sure that we have a fair and impartial criminal justice system. Critical race theory will put that on its ears because it will look at it from a subjective point of view that suggests that because you are a person of color, you are in a position that may not be beneficial to you only because of a system 200 years ago that gave you the inability to be the person you want to be.
State Representative Jean Schmidt, a Republican from Claremont County. Representative Schmidt, thank you so much for spending time with us today and sharing your perspective with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And up next, we'll continue a deeper exploration of what critical race theory is and isn't, according to an Ohio scholar. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Let's continue our conversation now. This time, University of Toledo sociology professor Dr. Monita Mungo joins us live via Zoom. Dr. Mungo, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You wrote an op-ed published by The Hill in Washington, D.C. They gave it the headline, "The Real Problem with Critical Race Theory." I want to read a quick couple of sentences from it. Quote, "But not teaching race in American history is revisionist. It takes courage to teach hard, uncomfortable history." And I read that now in the context of the conversation I just had with Republican State Representative Jean Schmidt, and that does seem to resonate, that there are parts of American history that some would appear to rather skip over. Is that really at the core of this conversation the nation is having now about critical race theory?
I think there are two main problems with the conversation that we're having about critical race theory in public domains. One is that what they're talking about is not really critical race theory. And two, yes, what is being talked about is a form of revisionist history, right? You can't say that the past history of race that had to deal with slavery is no longer present now, and then not teach why people are saying that it does exist, right? And I think that's part of the problem. Critical race theory is not, she did a wonderful job giving the legal definition from the American Bar Association. I mean, that was spot on, Derek Bell. But then there's lots of nuances that gets missed, lots of trigger words that get used that then make people take polarized positions about why we should not talk about America's, dirty secret, as I call it, in the op-ed about slavery and its the presence of the remnants of the institution of slavery.
You noted Representative Schmidt's reading of the definition as provided by the American Bar Association as it relates to critical race theory. I did ask her off the top of that interview for her to define it. Would you mind sharing a definition if you were asked in an elevator how you would quickly explain it?
Sure. I would literally just say it is a lens in which to view how race and power operate in society. And I would put a period there because critical race theory has lots of tenets that different scholars and theorists subscribe to and don't subscribe to. The American Bar Association definition that Representative Schmidt read, like she said, that's one definition and that's theirs. A simple definition is that it is a lens in which to view racism and how race and power operate in today's society.
And it seemed that one of the problems of many that Representative Schmidt and maybe other lawmakers and other Americans have with just the general references to critical race theory, something that Jean Schmidt said was that people should not be guilty for the sins of the past. And that seems like a challenge for people to grapple with that idea in a productive manner. So is there a way to do that?
So yes, I think, and I do it every time, you know, I teach when I have, I'm a sociologist, so I have to teach a lot of the hard issues of society, race being one of them. And so I say this in my class before we have the conversation about race. Okay, show of hands, anyone in here own slaves? And they all look at me, you know, with that weird, uncomfortable look. Okay, no one? All right. Does anyone, you know, was anyone in here a slave? They give me again an uncomfortable look and I say, okay, so now that that's out of, you know, out the way, let's talk about race. I think in order for us to have the conversation about race, we have to be real about it. No one is accusing, critical race theory is not accusing someone and saying you need to feel guilty for America's, you know, historical sins. But what it's saying is those historical sins have modern present day consequences that people or groups of Americans are still experiencing. So be mindful of that. And in order to know what those are, you have to know what that hard history is, right? And I think it's very disingenuous of all representatives, congresspeople, you know, whomever, to talk about race as not being an important factor when we reify race on a daily basis. Every time we fill out an application, the first thing or one of the things we are asked to do is to verify our race / ethnicity, right? So if it is not an important thing or an important determiner of some sort of social resource, why must we put that on applications, right? So it's disingenuous to say it's not important, yet we reify it every day in all the ways in which we live as citizens in the society.
I want to reference something else you wrote in the op-ed published at The Hill. You wrote that, quote, for example, consider that many poor whites have a perception of and have experienced loss in status, prestige, and money since the 1990s. Marginalized groups cannot be blamed for the economic setback of the white underclass since they, too, have experienced it, but at more alarming rates. And you go on to reference that because the plight of the white underclass has not been given as much public or political attention as racialized groups, the result is racial tension. And why isn't there a better conversation about that, perhaps?
Because if you make the populace who is, if you use race as the divisive tool, and because we've all been socialized to be divisive, you know, about conversations of race, then you can continue to keep that division there so that the groups don't come together, right? And then go against or resist the power that is. Right. So if I, you know, as a, you know, part of a member of the under white class, then I am not going to vote in my interest, which should be voting for things along racial and class lines. I'm going to vote against my interest because I don't want that black group to be better than me. Right. Because that's how we are socialized. And so that's what I'm referring to. And so if you keep, you use race as a tool to keep this division, then they, you know, the white underclass won't see that a lot of these, you know, programs that are created or have been created to help a marginalized group will actually help them as well. So sort of like, you know, rising tides helps all boats, right? That would be the effect. But again, because they have been socialized to see themselves as just a step up, you know, better than, you know, blacks, then they don't vote in their best interest.
I've got time to take a quick phone call. We'll go to the line now where we find Lisa. Hi, Lisa. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Yeah. So just kind of a reflection on Representative Schmidt's comment. And feeling disappointed as a white female, and reflecting on her opinion really being from her white perspective and her white opportunity, and that she doesn't appear to have taken the time to build that deeper understanding. And so I think that's a common and unfortunate perspective.
Lisa, thank you so much for taking the time to call and share your perspective with us. We do appreciate that. Thanks so much. And let's go back to Dr. Monita Mungo, a sociology professor at the University of Toledo, who recently had an op-ed about critical race theory published at The Hill, based in Washington, D.C. Dr. Mungo, I guess the challenge here is that there are a lot of white lawmakers who are pushing this legislation. I don't know if I've seen of any lawmakers of color who are pushing similar legislation.
Are there? Yes.
That I did not know. So why do you think this is happening now?
Because, you know, like I said in the op-ed, I think, you know, and this is clearly my opinion, but I do believe because people are currently experiencing inequality in large masses, I think it's just a sideshow. You know, if we keep, you know, the populace divided, the we being the legislators, keep the populace divided, they won't figure out that it is us who are, you know, at the root cause of why a lot of this inequality is being experienced at such high volumes right now, right? People are scared because of, you know, health concerns with going back to work because of the global the coronavirus pandemic, right? People are not making a livable wage as a result. I mean, I think, you know, I people made more money being at home, being on unemployment than they are making going back to their low wage jobs, right? And so if I, as a legislator, can keep people talking about issues that don't matter, like critical race theory, then I won't have to answer questions about why are you not fighting for my livable wage? Why are you not fighting for my health care? Why are you not fighting for my health safety, right? And one thing I do want to say, is that it's easy to go back to the Constitution and you know, pick up ideologies such as, you know, equality for all. But it has to be remembered when that Constitution was written, Black people were not considered people. We were considered property. And then at some point, a little bit, you know, beyond, then we became three-fifths of a person. And so that's really important. That's that hard history that people have to remember. We cannot count on the Constitution as you know, the ideological standard for which to refute using critical race theory in schools. That's my first point. Second point, critical race theory as a theory is not taught in elementary, middle, or high school.
I've got about 15 seconds. I'm so sorry.
Okay, that's fine.
Well,
go for it.
Here's what I want to do, Dr. Monita Mungo. I really enjoyed the conversation. I hope you'll come back soon.
Anytime you want me.
You got it. This is Dr. Monita Mungo, a sociology professor at the University of Toledo. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.